Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related with learning and awareness. We connect the dots that make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8 a.m., and the temperature outside is minus 16 degrees. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. It's a nice morning. Spring is in the air, and it's really nice to see the change in season.
Yeah, it is. It's been nice out this past day or two.
Yeah. Lots of snow.
Yeah, no kidding. As much snow as we should have had in December, I think.
Well, I had my share of shoveling snow, but I can leave the driveways for now because I know it's going to melt pretty soon. And so that's a good way of leaving it, you know, a good way of dealing with it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so just to make an acknowledgement of that we are... That Wooden Spoons, we acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree, Ojibwe, Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory for our life-giving water. I'm just going to run down, give a rundown of what we're going to be doing this morning. But first of all, I want to thank those that donated on Fund Drive to Wooden Spoons. I don't have all the names as yet, as far as I know, but I want to thank Debbie, Catherine, Indira, Eleanor, Michael, Laura, and I believe James is on the list as well. Thank you very much for your support on Fund Drive. So today is March the 8th already, and we have Harold Schuster, who's going to be joining us as a guest this morning, and then after that we will be discussing in the second half of our program. We'll be discussing some environmental info from the Wilderness Committee and updates on Mexico's position on protecting the ancient corn against the U.S. and Canada from, this comes from the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. And this is very relevant, this whole issue, because it has to do with genetically modified organisms, which are being introduced into our food. And then we will end this program at the end of the end of our program, we will have a very neat recipe. And so on this note, I would like to welcome Harold Schuster. He has been on our program before, and he's a member of the Independent Jewish Voices, a grassroots organization in Canada grounded in Jewish tradition that opposes all forms of racism and advocates for justice and peace for all in Israel and Palestine. Harold will be joining us this morning to provide the second of an educational series on the second Friday instead of the first Friday of the month as originally planned, because of a change in programming last week. And he'll be joining us to address the conflict between Israel and Palestine and to promote the path to peace. And so we will be talking to Harold. Good morning, Harold. Welcome to Wooden Spoons.
Good morning, Mary Jane. Thank you very much for having me. And I want to begin by wishing you and all your listeners who celebrate a very happy International Women's Day.
I think we need a little more volume.
Oh. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Well, I'm just having a little bit of trouble with the mic. I have to cover the mic with this oversized sock,
and it's
not going to fit. So we'll just
see if we can make it stay on somehow or the other. Well, we'll just leave it for now. Okay, so last month on February 2nd, Harold, you addressed apartheid, and today the topic is boycott, divestment, and sanctions. The tactic of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which we'll be referring to as BDS, has been in place against Israel since 2005. So do you want to explain this approach and how this strategy has been used?
Certainly. So at the time of its launch, there was a strong consensus among Palestinian civil society about the need for a broad and sustained campaign for boycotts, divestments, and sanctions, now commonly referred to as BDS. This resulted in the Palestinian call for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. It was launched in July of 2005 and was initially endorsed by over 170 Palestinian organizations. That was both in Palestine and throughout the diaspora. The BDS movement was a call for global solidarity with the struggle of the Palestinian people to have their international guaranteed civil and political rights to be respected and protected. Since 1948, since Israel's Declaration of Independence, Israel has denied Palestinians their fundamental rights and has refused to comply with international law. Israel maintains a regime of settler colonialism, apartheid, and occupation over the Palestinians. And this is only possible because of international support. Governments have failed to hold Israel to account, while corporations and institutions across the world help Israel to oppress the Palestinians. And because those in power refuse to act to stop this injustice, Palestinian civil society has called for a global citizens' response of solidarity with the Palestinian struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. I think that the BDS campaign was a strategically brilliant move as it shifted the focus of Palestinian resistance away from eruptive violence, the suicide bombings, guerrilla attacks against Israel, and the wide-scale violence that was a major part of the Second Intifada, which started in 2000 and lasted for a number of years. And the BDS sort of movement shifted the focus of the struggle to issues of human rights. This was much easier for people globally to relate to and see as wrong and something that they could support. Generally, I think if people believe in the universal nature of human rights, that includes all humans. As I like to say, if you believe in human rights, then it doesn't matter who the victim is or who the persecutor is. The violation of a person or a people's human rights is something that should concern everyone, and a campaign to protect those people whose human rights are being violated is an easier issue to get behind and support. And that has clearly been happening with the BDS movement.
Harold, we're having a bit of trouble hearing you. We have the volume up. Is there any... Maybe I have to put on my headphones. I'm not sure if that's the problem. Okay.
No.
Can you hear? Okay.
I can hear you fine.
Okay. No, you know, it's my mistake. I didn't put on my headphones. I'm very scattered this morning. A number of all kinds of interruptions this morning. Oh, sorry about that. But I understood what you were saying, so I'm glad that that you were coming through. But I'm thinking, I'm baffled by the fact that, you know, this kind of system in Israel is allowed to happen because of world support or lack of not supporting. Do you want to comment on that? It's hard for me to comprehend how that could be.
about how Israel has been able to maintain its 75-year occupation of the Palestinian people and the introduction of now what is widely regarded as an apartheid system. Is that what you're...
Yes.
It is baffling. I think it's a very unique situation where through things like the BDS movement, through calls for solidarity for the Palestinian people, it has been met with such a virulent opposition and reaction by Israel and its supporters. I think it's unique that other campaigns to support and show solidarity with oppressed people, which has happened in many parts of the world. Muslims in Rohingya Muslims in China, or Uyghurs in China, the Rohingyas in Myanmar, the Tibetans, you know, all sorts of campaigns to support an oppressed people has not met with the same sort of resistance and attempts to silence those calls for solidarity and support as happened with the attempts to support Palestinians in their fight for justice against the Israeli government. It is very unique, and it baffles me why governments have refused to. I mean, the BDS movement has generated a great deal of support on the boycott part, the boycott of products from Israel. Products that are manufactured or produced within Israel or the occupied territories has met with overwhelming support. The sanctions have been minimal. The sanctions part is to have governments introduce sanctions against Israel for its illegal behavior. And currently, I looked on the Government of Canada's website. Canada currently has sanctions against 26 other countries. So it's very easy and simple for Canada, should it want to introduce sanctions, to hold Israel to account, to let them know that what they're doing is wrong. And if Israel, for all its claims to be the only democracy in the Middle East, if it claims to be a democracy, there are rules and rules governing how democracies are supposed to act. And when governments fail to act within those boundaries of democratic practice, they open themselves to sanctions. And it should be no different with Israel for its illegal behavior, that governments should be able to sanction Israel to bring it into compliance with international law. I mean, Canada in the past has faced sanctions. There have been activities of our government. I think people might remember the seal hunts in eastern Canada, where seal hunters would walk out onto the ice floes and bludgeon seals to death. Rightly, animal rights protectors decried this form of killing and introduced sanctions, and the seal hunt ended. Canada was, I think, one of the last countries that mined and exported asbestos. There were international calls to ban the export of asbestos, and those succeeded. So for Canada to fail to introduce similar sanctions or any sorts of sanctions against Israel for what it's doing is, as you say, quite baffling.
Yeah, one can only, surmise. And I think part of it is some kind of collective guilt complex from the genocide of the Second World War, possibly. But anyway, I understand that an organization, the Palestinian BDS Committee, they oversee the operation of the sanctions. Do you want to explain the role of this committee and its legal basis?
Sure. So the BDS campaign is run by the Palestinian BDS National Committee, known by the acronym the BNC. And it is the broadest Palestinian civil society coalition that works to lead and support the BDS movement for Palestinian rights. It really has no legal status per se, but it does operate with the widest support from Palestinian civil society. So it has a moral authority more than a legal authority to govern and to act. And the efforts to coordinate the BDS campaign that began to grow rapidly since the 2005 call was made publicly, were culminated in a Palestinian BDS conference held in Ramallah in November of 2007. And out of this conference emerged the BNC as the Palestinian coordinating body for the BDS campaign worldwide. The BDS, or the BNC, has a very broad mandate, and its role includes to strengthen and spread the culture of boycott as a central form of civil resistance to Israel's occupation, colonialism, and apartheid. It serves as a Palestinian reference point for BDS campaigns, both in the region and worldwide. It facilitates the coordination and provides support and encouragement to the various BDS campaigns in all locations. Like I say, there are, you know, different kinds of, or different companies are targeted for boycott depending on where they are, where they're headquartered, and what they do. So the BNC coordinates those various campaigns. Some of the activities of the BNC include campaigning with BDS activists locally and worldwide for preparing and disseminating statements and public speaking notes, the monitoring and rapid response by means of the BNC calls for action against projects and initiates which amount to recognition of or cooperation with Israel's regime. So it works against the normalization of companies or businesses working with Israel, within Israel, or joint projects. It also works on media outreach in Palestine and abroad, coordinates with activists locally, and it does a lot of awareness raising and training. Had a very broad mandate, and like I say, it operates, it has coordinating committees in just about, or lots of countries around the world. There's a BNC coordinator for Canada, there's one in the U.S., and many throughout Europe and other parts of the world.
You're listening to CKW 95.9 FM on Wooden Spoons, and our guest today is Harold Schuster. My name is Mary Jane Eason with co-host John Dick. Do you have any comments, John?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay. Harold, could you give us an historical context, an example of boycott that has been used in the past and in other countries from which the Palestinian leaders have been or could draw upon or have been drawing upon?
Sure. As I mentioned, there were, you know, already been the two that I mentioned, the boycotts of Canadian products for the seal hunt and the asbestos mining. Canada also has, and I don't know how many of your listeners would be aware of this, Canada is a country of convenience for many, many mining companies, and many of these mining companies have an absolutely atrocious record in parts of the developing world where they operate. In indigenous communities impacted by Canadian mining operations have gone to the international court seeking sanctions against Canada and those companies. There was a very, very successful boycott campaign led by indigenous grape pickers in California. It called for a global boycott of California grapes and the wines, many of the wines that were produced from those grapes. There was, and I believe there might still be, a boycott of Nestle Corporation for its dumping of powdered milk into developing countries that has led to serious health issues for infants, as there are limited or not sufficient sources of potable water for mothers to use in making the formula from that powdered milk. So that, I think that was also another very successful boycott campaign.
Yeah, and of course in South Africa there was that as well.
So
this, it's good to know about all these different things. I forgot about the seal hunt and and there's other issues that you mentioned, but now I recall them, and thank goodness that they have them, and I'm really happy to know that mining is being addressed. I know at Development and Peace is an organization at our church, and we've had people come in, priests actually, that have been in the countries where this is happening, and They're bringing awareness, and there's always campaigning to support, the ending that situation in these countries. It's So the Palestinian boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS committee, they are reaching out to retailers across the world. And do you have, can you tell us what companies have been targeted for sanctions and why they have been selected?
Sure, I can tell. I mean, if I should have mentioned at the beginning, and I want to, you know, let your listeners know that if they go to the BDS movement website, there is, you know, a long list of the different companies that people can look at to, you know, if they wanted to support this campaign. There's also a website called Who Profits that also lists companies that are involved with the Israeli government, and those are also companies or that listeners could choose to boycott if they wanted. So I'll name a few of them. Hewlett-Packard, which is a company many people may know of. They, you know, people have computers or printers. Hewlett-Packard was chosen because it helps run the biometric identification system that Israel uses to restrict Palestinian movement. Puma, the sports company and clothing manufacturer, is targeted because of its support for the Israeli Football Association. SodaStream, very popular home carbonation system, is on the list for its active complicity in Israel's policy of displacing indigenous Bedouin Palestinian citizens in the Negev. And SodaStream also has a long history of mistreatment of and discrimination against its Palestinian workers. Ahava is a cosmetic company sold in Canada. It's has its production site and visitor center, and its main store is situated in an illegal Israeli settlement. Sabra is a company you find in many local grocery stores. It produces hummus, and it is a joint venture between Pepsi Company and the Strauss Group, which is an Israeli food company that provides financial support to the Israeli army. There's a currently launched campaign targeting Costco and encouraging customers of Costco not to buy the dates that Costco is selling because they come from illegal settlements. Chapters Indigo, the bookstore company, is a target for boycott because of the Hesseg Foundation that was funded and founded by the owners of Chapters Indigo. And this Hesseg Foundation offers support for what is described as lone soldiers, who are non-Israeli citizens who choose to go to Israel and join the Israeli army. Our Canada Pension Plan, sadly, and despite numerous attempts to have it change its investment policy, roughly 7% of the funds under the direction of the Canada Pension Plan is invested in companies that are profiting from Israeli war crimes. There's also been a recently launched, well, not so recent, I guess it's a few years now, targeting certain wines that are produced in the settlement areas. These are wines that are imported into Canada through International Sellers Incorporated, and they import a number of wines whose grapes are grown or who operate on Palestinian land. Those wineries include the Golan Heights Winery, Galil Mountain Winery, and Tepperberg 1870 Winery.
That is, it's, you know, that's very important to know that. So there would be a list one could find on the internet of all these companies and why that they are being boycotted.
Absolutely. Like I say, the BDS movement website and WHO Profits are two that I know of for sure that will list the different companies and why they're being targeted.
Mm-hmm. I believe that, I think it was it might have been at Organic Planet that it was one of the stores I go to that they, for years ago, I recall that they were selling they were selling oil or some type of oil that was from Palestine. They were supporting, they were definitely taking a stand to support that. And I remember boycotting that when South Africa was being boycotted, nobody would buy the wines from South Africa, things like that. So it's good to be on top of these things for sure. It's very effective method. I am quite appalled to hear that the CPP, that they are supporting war. You know, that is unconscionable, really.
It is very, very sad to know. Absolutely.
I'm not sure what Canadians can do about that. It's anyway, it's good to have that knowledge for sure. Okay, when we're talking about Palestinians, maybe you can just give us an overview. It's just not one group of people. There are different Palestinians in different situations. You want to explain that?
Sure, yeah. So the as part of the signatories to the BDS call, they sort of look at or divide Palestinians into three components. Those are refugees who are living in exile, Palestinians who are living under occupation in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem, and those Palestinians who are actually citizens and reside inside of Israel. Now, I've tried to find, you know, sort of current census data to give your listeners, a sense of how many people are, or how many Palestinians are, make up each part of those three components. And because of census data being hard to find, or different countries will do their census at different times, so it's difficult to get a really accurate number. It's roughly, there are about 7 million Palestinians who are living in the diaspora, you know, outside of Israel or the Palestinian occupied territories. There are about 5.5 million Palestinians who are living within the occupied territories. Again, those are the areas of Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. And that number is now about 32 or 33,000 less because of the 3 months of the ongoing genocidal war in Gaza and because of settler violence in the West Bank. And finally, there are about 1.8 million Palestinians who live inside of Israel proper. And to put that into a bit of a perspective, That 1.8 million comprises about 20% of the total Israeli population. I think
that's
that
a lot.
It might be a surprise to many of your listeners to know that, you know, for Israel to claim to be a democracy, that it has, you know, a long list of discriminatory laws and practices against a people that comprise 20% of its population. I'm trying to put that into a Canadian perspective, and it's hard to find, you know, an exact, say, province or area. But it would be roughly like saying that Canada had laws and rules for all of Canada except the three prairie provinces. And people living in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta would be treated differently than Canadians or the rest of Canadians in other parts of Canada, that there would be different laws governing how we in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta lived compared to the rest of Canada. That's roughly 20% of Canada lives in those three prairie provinces. So that's the level of discrimination that Israel is inflicting upon a large segment of its population.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's just quite mind-boggling. And then we're talking about the Palestinian BDS Committee on Israel. I understand that the emphasis that they are taking is on basic human rights and international law and does not focus or address the idea of having a two-state solution. Do you want to comment on that?
Sure. So the BDS movement has very deliberately not sort of gone into the political aspects of the occupation. So it has avoided commenting on what the final territorial status of that region would be, whether it be one state, two state, some sort of binational state. It focuses strictly on the three things: boycotts, which involve withdrawing support from Israel's apartheid regime, complicit Israeli sporting, cultural, and academic institutions, and from all Israeli and international companies engaged in violations of Palestinian human rights. Focuses on divestments, which are campaigns that urge banks, local council, churches, pension funds, and universities to withdraw investments from the State of Israel and all Israeli and international companies that help sustain Israeli apartheid. And finally, sanctions. And these are campaigns to pressure governments to fulfill their legal obligations to end Israeli apartheid and not aid or assist its maintenance by banning businesses with illegal Israeli settlements, ending military trade and free trade agreements, as well as suspending Israel's membership in international forums such as UN bodies, FIFA. And as I say, Canada currently has sanctions against 26 countries. So it's not like this BDS movement, which is sometimes portrayed as unfairly targeting Israel. It is not unfair to demand of a democratic country who wants to be seen as part of the free world to hold it to account for when it's behaving in the ways and the manners that it is.
Yeah. So,
quickly to finish that, I was going to say that what the BNC has called for with these nonviolent punitive measures, that they be in place, that we continue with the boycotts, divestments, and sanctions until Israel meets its obligation to recognize the Palestinians' inalienable right to self-determination and fully complies with international law. So the three asks that the BNC wants is, one, that Israel end its occupation and colonization of all Arab lands and dismantles the wall, the separation wall, the apartheid wall, whatever you want to call it, the wall that Israel has built that divides areas of the occupied territories from Israel proper. The second ask is the recognizing the fundamental rights of all Arab Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. And third, respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties, as was stipulated in United Nations Resolution 194. So those are the three things that the BNC is asking of Israel to do, and encouraging people to maintain boycotts, divestments, and sanctions against Israel until it complies with those asks.
And those are totally reasonable, totally reasonable requests. It just goes without saying. It doesn't have to, anybody that supports a democracy would recognize those are the rights that have to be protected. And the other thing that is there is an effect on the boycotts and sanctions on Israel. And do you want to comment on that? Because I think that people are starting to be much more aware than they are before because of these boycotts, and it's starting to raise the consciousness, and also people of conscience are responding. Do you want to comment on the effects on Israel of this boycott and sanctions?
As I said earlier, I think that this was a a strategically very smart move by Palestinian civil society to shift partly their own focus of moving away from trying to gain their independence, to have their rights respected through a, you know, through a war, through trying to fight against Israel, which of course it was never going to win. Israel, as many of your listeners would know, is, you know, among the most powerful military armies in the world. And for people who have no military, who have no arm, you know, no air force, no sea capabilities, the Palestinians were never going to win a battle against Israel. So the shift to calling for support to have their human rights respected was something that was much easier for people to recognize and to support. And I often use the adage that first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win, to describe Israel and their lobbyists' response to the BDS movement. And we are currently deeply entrenched in the fighting phase. When it was first launched, say in 2005, and perhaps out of arrogance, it was ignored by Israel. It was not thought to have any chance of success. Israel had so dominated the narrative. They had almost complete control over what was said, how the world understood what was happening in Israel, and how the world viewed Israel, you know, as the most humane army in the world, the forever victim, the ever threatened David, you know, fighting the Arab Goliath, whose sole goal was to wipe Israel off the map and push Israelis into the sea. That Israel supporters couldn't imagine that a new and different story would gain the world's attention and gain international support. And that is exactly what has happened. So from being ignored to being laughed at, there is now a concentrated fight to have the BDS movement deemed an anti-Semitic action, which has really become the only tool that Israel and its supporters have. You know, they have lost the moral argument, they have lost legitimacy, and in a desperate attempt to not have to answer to their illegal and current deadly attacks against Palestinians, have turned to label every action against Israel and every critic of Israel anti-Semitic. They have no legitimate way of defending what Israel is doing, so they attack the messenger. They simply slap the label of anti-Semitism onto a report, an institution, a group, or an individual, and then they can dismiss what is being said or reported on and don't have to deal with the substantive nature of what is being said. You know, it was clearly what happened when, now I think it's almost 14 different human rights organizations, and I talked a little bit about this last time around apartheid. All of those reports have basically gone unheeded because Israel and its supporters just label all of them as coming from anti-Semites or anti-Semitic organizations, and therefore they're not dealt with. There is, you know, there is now an entire branch of the Israeli government that is dedicated to tracking and following BDS campaigns in an effort to suppress support for them. The Israeli government has been successful in getting state and federal governments to make support of the movement grounds for firing or to have potential employees sign agreements stating that they will not support boycott measures. And it's true in Canada. You know, our prime minister stood up in Parliament one day and called the BDS movement illegal.
Well, I can't believe what I'm hearing. I mean, it's just he's supposed to be so enlightened, this prime minister of ours. Anyway, thank you, Harold, for joining us this morning. It's been you've given us so much information, and we need to hear it. We need to learn more about it, and we need to take part in the divestment. Boycott and sanctions movement, and support the rights of the Palestinian people. I know that there are people in Israel that are not supporting their government, but I don't think the Israeli people have a democratic government either. So, you know, they are also, we have to recognize that they are also victims of the present Israeli government. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. I welcome the opportunity, and I look forward to the next time we get together, which I'm thinking will be, we're looking at April 5th.
The first first week, where we were going on the first week, right? Except this was the second week because of a little bit of a shift.
I'll be talking a little bit about Zionism at that on that meeting, and then our gathering in May, I'll be talking about the Nakba, which is commemorated every May 15th. If I could quickly just add, you know, if your listeners are wanting to know more, to find out more, next Saturday, the 16th of March, there'll be an event at the Canadian Museum for Human Rights, where you'll be able to hear from Palestinians who have family in Gaza, and a little bit about what their experience has been. There'll be information tables with information, some of it that I've talked about today, and other ways that people can get involved or things that they can do. And then there are also weekly rallies. I think this Saturday it's going to be at the St. Vital Mall, and it'll mark, I think, the 20th week of rallies in support for Palestine and Palestinians. And I would encourage your listeners, if they're available, it's 1:30 at the St. Vital Mall, and everyone is welcome to come out.
And the Museum of Human Rights is on Saturday. What time did you say?
Saturday, the March 16th, from 2 until 5.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. And on this note, we're going to have a song, I think. Do you have a song that Harold suggested, Dawn?
I'll have to pull it up. I'll see if I can do that.
It's a Cyndi Lauder, I believe.
Okay, hang on. I just have to log into my email and then...
It was Cyndi Lauper's "Girls Just Want to Have Fun." I thought it might be a nice contrast to what
our
disappointing or disheartening discussion about BDS.
And it's also International Women's Day too.
Yeah, let's have a bit of fun.
Here we go.
All right. Thanks again, Mary Jane, for having me on, and Dawn, for your help.
My pleasure.
In a month.
Yes.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Live your life right. Oh, Mama, did we not?
I just have a bit of an announcement to make here. So for Mary Jane's Cooking School, there is an Indian cooking class with Nandita. You can learn how to make palak paneer and basmati rice and veggies with coconut chutney, followed by a sit-down dinner. Date for that is Saturday, March 9th from 1 to 4 p.m. The cost is $60 to register. You can contact Mary Jane's Cooking School at 204-775-2522 or email mjcookin, that's mjcookin at mymts.net. Location is 252 Arlington Street, which is just south of Portage Avenue. You are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM.
Thank you, John. And but Nandita is we have room for more participants, and she has been offering Indian cooking workshops for many years at Mary Jane's Cooking School. So this Saturday, she'll be joining us again. I have a bit of time. The topic that Harold was speaking about has to be discussed, and I appreciate all the information. I'm going to be going next to talking about Mexico and the GM corn. This is some information I received from Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. The coordinator is Lucy Charette. And Mexico is taking a brave moral stance again and protecting our food, unlike Canada and the United States, who have bought into genetically modified food. Canada and the United States are using the Canada-US-Mexico trade agreement to challenge Mexico's ban on using genetically engineered, that's genetically modified or GM corn, for making traditional foods. The Mexican government's submission to the trade dispute panel has just been published, and it forms a strong defense of its restrictions on GM corn. The government of Mexico writes that there are five major issues surrounding glyphosate and GM corn that the panel should consider. One, the relationship between glyphosate, that's the pesticide that's used, and GM corn. Two, the health risks caused by glyphosate and GM corn with tolerance to certain herbicides. Three, the risks faced by the environment caused by glyphosate. Four, the damage caused by Mexico's native corn by the transgenic introgression resulting from GM corn. And five, the damage to the biocultural richness of peasant communities and Mexico's gastronomic heritage. Just to make a point, a comment on glyphosate, there are hearings. We do not hear about them, but there are hearings going on in the United States suing Monsanto, now Bayer, for the ill effects of glyphosate on the health of people that are using this pesticide. And so this is going on behind the scenes. And so it's a very dangerous chemical. CBAN explains these issues in a report at the www.cban.ca/trade dispute. Mexico, I was want to add a little bit more about Mexico. The Mexico writes this that over these three decades, according to the scientific literature, there is no scientific consensus on the safety of GM crop consumption. In its submission of 199 pages, Mexico calls out the U.S. government for using pseudo-scientific propaganda, in quotes, in its arguments when it discusses a body of literature that it claims confirms GM safe food safety. Mexico writes, these publications that lack scientific rigor, they are not endorsed by scientific institutions, neither public nor private. They have not been peer-reviewed. They are not based on the scientific, experimental, or social method, and many times they are biased or their authors have a conflict of interest. There is also propaganda that in order to favor and there's also propaganda that in order to favor and promote the use of GM crops, Mexico also notes the large number of outdated sources used by the U.S. government and states that most of the studies showing GM foods to be safe have been conducted by biotechnology or associated companies. Mexico summarizes the purpose of its restrictions on GM corn as, quote, the protection of human health, which includes one, direct exposure to glyphosate as an agricultural chemical product, and two, the production of human health from food safety risks arising from the consumption of genetically modified corn grain. So this is a case that's going on, and hopefully justice will prevail. And it's long overdue, this whole situation of glyphosate. And Canada, Health Canada has never questioned, and has never. It's basically corporate influence on our food supply, and Mexico has standing up to it, and its protection of ancient grain, ancient corn. And we need to all be protecting our food, because our food is at great risk under the present times we live in, which is based on corporate influence, not on health, and not on the health of the soil or health for people. I have a beautiful recipe called beet and brown rice burgers that I'd like to share with you before we have time to do this, as we're running close to the end of our program again. And this is CQW 95.9 FM on Wooden Spoons. I'm Mary Jane Eason with John Dick. This recipe is very neat, and it's a vegetarian. It calls for 3 medium beets scrubbed clean and trimmed, and 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 red onion diced, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of red wine vinegar, and 1.5 cups of cooked black or red beans, 1/2 cup of cooked brown rice, and 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, potato starch, or arrowroot powder, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley, and freshly ground pepper. So what you have to do is grate the beets on a box grater, and you can leave the peels on if you scrub them clean. And then you can take 2 tablespoons of oil in a large covered sauté pan over medium heat. You heat the oil over medium heat in a pan, and then you add the onion, and you have to cook it. And add the onion, and add the until it softens and begins to look translucent. You have to sauté it for about 6 to 8 minutes, and then you add the beets and salt, and toss to combine. Cover and cook for 10 to 12 minutes until the beets are completely softened. Then you add the vinegar. And toss to combine, and then keep cooking until the pan is dry. Use a wooden spoon to scrape up the brown bits from the pan and set aside to cool slightly. In a mixing bowl, coarsely mash the beans with a potato masher or a fork, and fold in the beet mixture and the rice, the cornstarch and parsley, and season with salt and pepper. Shape them into 6 patties, flattening to 1/2 inch thickness. To cook, warm a wide skillet over medium-high heat, then add the remaining oil. Add as many burgers that will comfortably fit in the pan, and use a metal spatula to flatten them slightly. Cook until browned and crisp at the bottom for about 5 to 10 minutes. Then flip and repeat on the other side. The burgers will firm up as they cook, and further after they have been removed from the heat and have cooled slightly. So they will firm up later when you take them out. And These burger, this recipe comes from a book that I just purchased called Veggie Burgers, Every Which Way by Lucas Bulger. And he it's been recommended by a number of prominent authors like Deborah Madison, who wrote Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone and Vegetable Literacy, Martha Rose Shulman, there's Kathy Irway, who won the James Beard Award winning as a food writer, James Beard Award. And I like the book too because it also interchanges cornstarch, potato starch, and arrowroot using either of those types of thickeners instead of flour for those that are gluten-free. And so it's nice to know that these starches are all similar and can be interchanged. So cornstarch, potato starch, and arrowroot has been the thickener in these particular recipes. So I think we are almost at the end of our program, and I just want to mention, I don't know if we if John mentioned it when we were talking about programs, we are going to be having our second Saturday is going to be on the third Saturday. It's going to be on the third Saturday this month. We prepare soups, and they're for sale. And they're made. The soup is going to be minestrone and black bean with lime. Two different types of soup, and we'll be making them and having them for sale on the 16th on Saturday. I believe that's the 16th. It's the second Saturday. Well, it'll be the third Saturday. So we'll have our soups for sale. And if you're interested, you can call 775-2522 to place an order, or email mjcookin@mymts.net, or come to the school on that day from 1 to 4 p.m. So that'll be the Saturday of March the 16th. So I think we have,
I'm just about to close the show right now. Hang on.
And so I want to thank our guests for joining us this morning, Harold Schuster, and thank the listeners for joining us as well. And also you, John, for being our co-host.
Yeah, for sure.
Keeping this going.
Yeah. You have been listening to A Wooden Spoon, sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School on CKUW 95.9 FM. If you didn't catch some of the things we were talking about today, please visit our website at ckuw.ca, type Wooden Spoons into the search bar, and the podcast of the episode will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Easton saying bye for now, and thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!